You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 17th of September, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
You know, I can't think of the guy's name, but there was this writer who used to talk about how liberal the military is and how it's the left that wants war all over the place. And it's not the Cold War anymore. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but ever since Trump made this comment, now everyone's talking like this. I don't know. Maybe we'll hear from him. If you could think of his name, just let me know.
Well, it is surprising. I mean, I've always thought that the left were against war. I mean, that is the common way that people think about things. They think the left are the pacifists and the hippies, and they don't want war. And it's just not true. They are the ones that were calling for the no-fly zone in Libya. They were the ones that are calling for an invasion in Iran. And a lot of this has been down to Joe Biden. And we're going to be getting into some of this today. And we're going to start with Trump's exposure of the military top brass, which happened last week. And the quotes that we've got today come from Global Research. Once again, the whispers of phantoms masquerading as administration officials have attempted to put Donald Trump on the defensive only 2 months before the fall election. And in typical fashion, the roused president has gone on an immediate rhetorical offensive. Trump has doubled down on his affirmations towards the US military and the American soldier, while simultaneously confronting the class of generals who command them. "I'm not saying the military is in love with me. The soldiers are," Trump said at a Labor Day press conference. "The top people in the Pentagon probably aren't, because they want to do nothing but fight wars so that all of those wonderful companies that make the bombs and make the planes and make everything else stay happy. This is a dramatic shift in perspective from the man who spent the first 2 years of his presidency surrounding himself with top brass like Michael Flynn, John Kelly, H.R. McMaster and James Mattis, along with almost being beguiled into nominating Dave Petraeus as Secretary of State. Perhaps Trump learned the hard way that the generals of the forever wars don't measure up to the 20th century soldiers he adulated whilst growing up. For instance, when George Marshall oversaw the deployment of 8.3 million GIs across four continents in World War II, he did so with the assistance of only three other four-star generals. In retirement, Marshall refused to sit on any corporate boards and passed on multiple lucrative book deals, lest he give the impression that he was profiting from his military record. As he told one publisher, he had not spent his life serving the government in order to sell his life story to the Saturday Evening Post. Well, how things have changed since then over the last 75 years. Can you imagine a highly placed military man saying something like that now, not wanting to talk to the newspapers, actually having some integrity? What do you make of this, Matt?
Well, I'm one of the few people to talk about the massive purges of the U.S. military by the Obama administration, the last Bush administration too, mostly at the Pentagon. Obama forcibly retired hundreds of these guys, meaning that the people there now are of a different breed altogether. But for the last 10 years, roughly, you have almost 400 high-ranking military officials being hired by the big contractors, something like 25 generals and lower-ranking generals, 23 admirals. And I think it's the Project on Government Oversight. They're like Jack Dorsett, who was the head of Naval Intelligence, went on the board of Northrop Grumman. William Crow from the Joint Chiefs went to General Dynamics. I think Mattis went to General Dynamics. So these guys retire from the military at a high rank and work. I don't even know what these people do exactly, but they're on the board of these huge corporations. They get multi-million dollar salaries. These are all millionaires. And of course, that was not the case years ago. Because these guys have this revolving door connection with the industrial complex, they now have a huge number of friends and supporters in the active duty military. They have now a financial interest in these expanding wars. This is something that Smedley Butler used to go on and on about during World War I and after. So you have most of these guys forcibly retired, guys leaving the service with a star on their shoulders now, almost all of them going straight to the industrial complex and serving as a lobbyist or with their connections in the military will guarantee that the taxpayer money continues to flow for these wars.
So it's very similar to politicians that work in the EU and then they go and get a job working for banks, or you get politicians in Britain that then go and get a job working for Facebook. It interests me that there were only four generals that were required in order to win the Second World War. And I do wonder how many diversity and inclusion officers you have over there, Matt. They seem to be the essential thing that you need to have in your army is a diversity and inclusion officer. That's what is going to win the war. That's the talk that's happening over here in Britain at the moment. But we also have some turncoat warmongers who were supportive of the Republicans but are now pledging loyalty to Biden. If fodder is needed for the argument that a deep state is running wild and determined to depose President Donald J. Trump, this will surely help. In a statement by self-titled former Republican national security officials, a hand-on-heart allegiance is made to Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. The authors are intent on moving the incumbent out of office, profoundly concerned about our nation's security and standing in the world under the leadership of Donald Trump. The president has demonstrated that he is dangerously unfit to serve another term. This seems to be a meme that they're pushing here, Matt. These are the sort of language that I keep hearing on the television, that the president is unfit to serve another term. And people always seem to be profoundly concerned about America's standing in the world under Donald Trump. It really does play into this idea of there being a deep state, because they're all repeating the same thing, aren't they? They're all saying that the president is unfit. Have you noticed this, Matt? They all seem to be saying the same thing.
Well, this is how it always is. They go to all these meetings together. They agree on a script. They say the same things with the same verbiage, the same slogans, the same deep concern. And it comes down to the fact that Donald Trump is the first president in a very long time who in his first term didn't start a war somewhere. So these guys are upset. Usually what they do, as I've written about in the past, is that they pin more medals on themselves, because you have this massive inflation of medals being pinned on just anybody for existing in the military now. But yeah, you needed four generals in World War II, but now there are hundreds and hundreds with a handful of men under them, most of them career bureaucrats. So that's all they are deep state functionaries.
Well, these former security officials, who include former Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage and former Director of the Central Intelligence Agency and National Security Agency General Michael Hayden, see Joe Biden as the better horse. He has, quote, the character, experience and temperament to lead this nation, close quote. They might have their disagreements with him, but there would be the time to debate those policy differences. In the immediate future, Trump had to be ushered out of office to stop his assault on our nation's values and institutions. That's another one. They keep talking about his assault on the nation's values. I think you're correct here, Matt. They do. They have a script that they must pass around to all of them, and they have to remain on script with the language they use. But the message is regaled in the language of defending democracy. The very sort of fragile creature such individuals have not been averse to mutilating in the past. But it is also couched in terms of COD psychology. The term unfit is used four times. This lack of fitness is demonstrated by bad character, corrupt behaviour, and the inability to lead during a national crisis. What is particularly galling for the authors is that Trump dared interfere with the national security family, offices of the Imperium that should run without disruption and melodrama. This mismanagement, as they term it, involved the dismissal or replacement, often by tweet, of the Secretaries of State, Defense, and Homeland Security, the Attorney General, the Directors of National Intelligence and the FBI, three National Security Advisors, and other senior officials in critical national security positions. Well, this makes me much more supportive of Trump. I mean, when I heard that he was sacking all these people, I was thinking, you know, what's going on? He keeps sort of just replacing these people. Does he know who he's actually replacing them with? But when you look at it here, it's like he's getting rid of all these people from the deep state. He is actually trying to clear the swamp, as it were, don't you think?
That's exactly what he's doing. Some of the lower level bureaucrats are unionized and it's very, very hard to get rid of them. But these guys aren't. And we'll see here in a minute that there's a reason that they're picking Biden. Because Biden is mostly a foreign policy guy, and he has been one of the big pro-war Democrats in the Senate for decades. The very fact that he is interfering with their day-to-day operations is something that's not happened before. Remember, Trump campaigned without taking a penny from anybody. He doesn't owe anybody anything. And so he came into office with an agenda, which he's had a tough time putting into practice. But at least this is one campaign promise that he is that he's actually following through with. And I guess some of these guys are hoping that these pro-military Republicans who still think it's the 60s are going to start moving their votes to Biden in some kind of misplaced patriotic outburst.
Well, the signers of the declaration also take issue with the president's spread of misinformation, the undermining of public health expertise, attacking officials at state and local level, and wallowing in self-pity. He had demonstrated greater interest in re-election than the health of the American people. Misinformation is a good point. Trump has been exceedingly inventive to the point of fiction in coping with the COVID-19 pandemic. He takes of the root of conspiracy. But it is also worth noting that many of these former security officials who take issue with him were not averse to getting on the well-laden wagon of misinformation when it came to launching a war against Iraq in 2003. The administration of George W. Bush was stacked high with true believers, allergic to the findings of UN weapons inspectors. Then Secretary of State Colin Powell, who put in an appearance at the Democratic National Convention just past, gave a show of supreme mendacity on February the 5th, 2003, before the United Nations. "What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence," he said. What was solid was the premature adjudication of the matter. Saddam Hussein had to go, and fictional weapons of mass destruction would do nicely as a pretext. The result was the commission of what is loftily described as the supreme international crime, the crime against peace, or what is sometimes, if awkwardly termed, a war of aggression. In 2005, criminologists Ronald Kramer, Raymond Michalowski, and Dawn Rothe gazed forlornly at the US-led invasion of Iraq and concluded that it and the subsequent occupation violated international law. State crimes had been committed, and state officials responsible for the violations of law pursuant to the invasion and occupation of Iraq are guilty of war crimes. I mean, what Trump has said about COVID just pales into insignificance when you think about the millions that were unnecessarily slaughtered in the Iraq war. And all they're trying to say here is that Donald Trump is wallowing in self-pity and he gives out misinformation. I mean, this is nothing compared to a completely illegal war that people still haven't been held to account for. What do you make of this accusation of misinformation here, Matt?
Well, first of all, wallowing in self-pity, well, that's exactly what these guys are doing. Trump has increased the military budget substantially over the last 2 years. And these are the first guys to come out and say, oh, we're suffering. There have been budget cuts in all areas, knowing full well that that simply isn't true. Every time, you know, these guys have lost every war they've ever tried to fight. They're in no position. And what the hell are they talking about COVID for? That if nothing else, it proves that this is not even them writing this. That this is they're talking about policy areas they have no competence in, but the one area they have no competence in is military matters, because everywhere the U.S. has gone recently, they've lost. Having to surrender to the Taliban as I predicted years ago, it destroys these guys' credibility as military leaders with all the trillions that have been poured into it. But I'm not going to be lectured to by men who are responsible for the deaths of over a million civilians just in Iraq alone. And these guys were on the ground for some of that. But these are one-liners. These are slogans. There's no foundation here. And the very fact that they're talking about things like COVID show you how high up this whole pandemic thing really goes, that you have military men talking about this as a way to attack Donald Trump. What do they care one way or the other? But that these guys were involved in some of the worst war crimes. I don't care. There's no such thing as international law. That's make-believe. But that these men were responsible for this will never be brought to justice. And they're going to lecture us about wallowing in self-pity, that Trump is worried about re-election as if no other president has cared about re-election. This is. I hope enough people are going to get the point here and really turn on these guys.
Well, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? The mainstream media will accuse Trump of giving out misinformation, and then these generals will accuse him of it, and then the press will report the generals of giving out that Trump is giving out misinformation, and then the generals will repeat that they heard it from the press, and it just goes round and round in circles as the oligarchy tries to meme these things into reality. It was the same when they tried to say that Saddam Hussein had these weapons of mass destruction. Where were they? Everybody believed that he did have them because the official people were telling us they did. The intelligence were telling us they did. The mainstream media was telling us that he did. And of course, he didn't. This is the way these things work. They give out this false information trying to achieve something. And as we said, Joe Biden was pretty central to this. Throughout Biden's public life, he has been pro-war, pro-business, anti-progressive, anti-labor, anti-governance, serving everyone equitably, anti what matters most to ordinary Americans. If elected in November by fair or foul means, he will likely continue or escalate ongoing wars on invented enemies and perhaps launch new ones. He bragged about being Obama's geopolitical expert, once saying he was picked as vice president because his boss lacked background in foreign policy. Obama bragged about bombing 7 countries in 8 years, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and Somalia. Did he order preemptive strikes on these countries without just cause, based on advice given to him by Joe Biden? Matt, I'll just stop there. I mean, it's a rhetorical question, but is there evidence to show that's where he was getting his advice from, to go and bomb these countries?
Well, I remember distinctly that he was one of the reasons he was brought in, especially because he's such from a tiny state, was because he is concerned with foreign policy. Since the early 90s, of course, when the left didn't care about peace anymore, now you're talking about more or less right-wing governments that have come under attack, nationalist governments. All of a sudden, Biden's very interested in it. I spoke 2 weeks ago about his connection with the KLA drug dealers and white slavers in the Balkans who've been financing his campaigns for years. There hasn't been a single war that this guy hasn't signed off on, whether it be his vice president or in the Senate. Now, I don't know for absolutely certain if that's where Obama got it from, but there's no question that he didn't stand in the way. Because none of these wars, you feel bad for Biden because he lost 2 children. But then you realize that his policies have led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of children overseas. So, you know, you don't feel sorry for him anymore. And he claims to be a geopolitical expert. He's very ignorant about it. But so is the average American. They still think that Democrats are these hippie peaceniks. And they want war everywhere, so long as they disagree with the system. And so I can't tell you for sure if that's the case, but he would have voted for it in the Senate and did vote for it in the Senate before he was vice president.
Well, he doesn't seem to be able to tell Iran and Iraq apart. I mean, I keep seeing these video clips of him, and he keeps forgetting that Iran is actually a different place to Iraq, and he keeps getting confused. Probably doesn't even know where they are on a map. According to Washington Post articles published last December, Chicken Hawk Biden, as senator and vice president, promoted U.S. aggression in Afghanistan from inception, opposing its resolution. Wanting his warrior past reinvented, he lied, saying, "I'm the guy from the beginning who argued that it was a big, big mistake to surge forces to Afghanistan, period." We should not have done it, and I argued against it constantly, he said. He's one of many guys in Washington who backed every U.S. war of choice against invented enemies throughout his near half century in politics, and he has opposed none of them. Like many figures in the nation's capital, he disagreed at times on tactics, but not on fundamental imperial policy. The Washington Post, one release of more than 2,000 pages of Lessons Learned interviews conducted by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, and it reported, adding, those interviews reveal there was no consensus on the war's objectives, let alone how to end the conflict. Washington Post also obtained confidential Bush-Cheney regime memos. Material it reviewed showed that from inception to 2019, US ruling authorities failed for nearly two decades to deliver on their promises to end the war in Afghanistan that they want continued. Biden shares the guilt with the others in high places. According to retired Army Colonel Bob Crowley, a counterinsurgence advisor in Kabul from 2013 to 2014, U.S. strategy became self-validating. Every data point was altered to present the best picture possible. And I've saw on the news today they had on RT they had these veterans, and they were saying that there's no way they're going to vote for Biden because he's led them into all these wars. And it's not just the journalists that are saying this. It's the military themselves that are saying that they are against Biden for this reason. What do you make of this information here, Matt, that Washington Post managed to dig up?
Well, you know, thank God for WikiLeaks, because a lot of the information initially came from there. I've been making these arguments for maybe a decade and a half now, if not more. You could say the same about Bernie Sanders, who voted for most of these wars too. Remember, these governments, you can't really use the left-right paradigm there, but they're generally conservative regimes. So the right certainly has no interest in it, except that they still think this Cold War is going on, but the left certainly does. But now the Military Times did do a poll in late August where it shows that as of August 20th, I think it was, 37.4% military men will vote for Trump in this coming election. 41% are going to vote for Biden. Now, the support for Trump hasn't changed all that much since before the election in 2016. What did change a lot was that Hillary was getting like 20%. So Biden has double what Hillary got at the same time in the election cycle. And the officer corps, according to the Military Times, about 50% have an unfavorable view of Trump. And I have the feeling most of that has to do with the deep state comments. Because, of course, he's talking about them to a great extent. I mean, the military has everything to do with this. You'll never hear Biden talk about this. But as far as these sudden revelations that it was all based on lies, it was failure, it was casualty figures. I was the only person saying that the casualty figures were wildly deflated and that they're 3, 4, 5 times the amount that was reported both by the military and the press. Suddenly, all of a sudden, people start talking about this because Trump made it okay. Trump's now saying that, and the whole comment, the Atlantic magazine comment about the suckers and losers and stuff, of course, was never uttered. It's absolutely ridiculous. There was absolutely no names, but they were all anonymous sources, so they could say whatever they please. At the very least, the comments above that you were reading, at least they have names attached to them. But the Atlantic article certainly didn't. So they could say whatever they please. But, you know, as far as Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Johnson's law always rules here. No one knows what's going on over there, so they could make up stuff as they please. Only now, decades later, has everything that I've been saying and a handful of others, now it turns out to be true. And what Trump said about the military-industrial complex, just like Eisenhower, turned out to be correct after all.
Well, I should imagine that lots of the rank and file in the military do support Donald Trump because, you know, they're going to be patriotic people, and Donald Trump is patriotic. And I would imagine that they're also a little bit shy of saying that they support him as well, because it may not go down too well with their superiors. But there are other reasons for these wars as well. And this is something that was actually missed by the mainstream media. 4 days ago, Donald Trump said the US is not involved in the Middle East for oil, but because we want to protect Israel. The comments have gone all but unreported in the mainstream press. Trump made the comment during a rally in Winston-Salem, NC on September the 8th, when he was bragging about America's energy independence, which he said Joe Biden would undermine if he gets into the White House. And this is from minute 47. He said, "I like being energy independent, don't you? I'm sure that most of you noticed when you go to fill up your tank in your car, oftentimes it's below $2. You say, how the hell did this happen? Thank you, President Trump. Look at your electric bills and everything else. These guys, your electric would go up 4, 5, 6 times. The Green New Deal, it's called the Green New Nightmare. While I'm president, America will remain the number one producer of oil and natural gas in the world. We will remain energy independent. It shouldn't be for many, many years to come. The fact is, we don't have to be in the Middle East, other than we want to protect Israel. We've been very good to Israel. Other than that, we don't have to be in the Middle East. You know, there was a time we needed desperately oil. We don't need that anymore. We have more than they do. Isn't that nice? After years of rebuilding other countries, we are finally rebuilding our country." The American Conservative's Barbara Boland is the only reporter who seems to have picked up Trump's remarks. Nobody else cares, evidently. Do you remember all the arguments about why we are engaged in so many conflicts in the Middle East? And why we are going to war in Iraq? And the mainstream default position is that it's because of oil, even though we lost the oil concessions in Iraq. These comments by Trump, the disruptor, tie into the long but shadowy pedigree of analysis from policymakers that we invaded Iraq to make Israel safer. Like the former head of the 911 Commission, who said that the threat to Israel was the motivation for the war, but that was the threat that dare not speak its name. Or Colin Powell's comment that we went into Iraq because the Secretary of Defense bought the neoconservative arguments of the JINSA crowd, referring to the Israel lobby group, the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs. So it's not like Trump is the first person to actually say this. There are quite a few people who have said this, that these wars are actually for Israel, but for some strange reason, it doesn't get picked up by the mainstream media, Matt. What do you make of this?
Well, a comment like that you think would. The only reason they would repress it is that people start thinking about, you know, the Zionist influence on foreign policy. Now, the U.S. hasn't ever used the Persian Gulf area to import oil. That's never been the case. I've been saying this for over 20 years. Even oil concessions from the U.S. American firms in Iraq, Saddam Hussein had no problem with that. That was never an issue. So there was no disruption there. Even if we did get any, we never got any oil from Iraq. I said this from the very beginning. And if you remove oil as a motivation, well, there's only one thing left, and that's the power of the Israeli lobby. Oil has never been an issue there. And of course, you know, we know why gas prices are going down. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the COVID economy. But oil has never been a concern. American oil, I think the EU has brought some oil in from the Persian Gulf, but that oil mostly goes east. We've known for decades that Israel's the only reason the U.S. is there. The left need to talk about war for oil because they don't get accused of being anti-Jewish, even though they're often very critical of Israel. So they invented the story that oil was a concern without bothering to research where America's oil came from back then, and 0% came from that area. It was always about Israel. As I've said many times, the countries that the U.S. have attacked over there are those on the cusp of first world status. The big threat to Israel is that a first world economy means a first world army, and it's a giant threat to Israel. And all these countries, with the exception of Iran, have been bombed back to at least third world status, if not worse. That's always been the concern. U.S. oil concessions have never been threatened over there, no matter what government's in power. The U.S. is the number one oil consumer in the world. They'd have to be suicidal to cut the U.S. off. But that's what they were saying back in the early 90s. I remember this very well. So, but the fact that Trump is coming out saying this blatantly, you know, unfortunately, the pro-Zionist stuff has been the weakest part of his presidency. The most enraging, but especially since the Jews don't give him a break in America. They love him there. They hate him here. So hopefully that gambit is going to, if he gets reelected, that's going to go away in his second term. He finally has learned his lesson. But for him to say that that his policies have had anything to do with low gas prices. And of course, given that it's still pretty much $0 a gallon, more or less, and the gas prices are still $3 in most places, proves that there's gouging all over the place. But the COVID economy is responsible for that, not any energy independence. But for him to admit this is a big deal. I'm just hoping this goes away in the second term.
Well, I guess he just feels so confident in America's support for Israel that he doesn't see that there's anything wrong with Americans giving up their lives for this other country over there in the Middle East. I mean, his support for Israel, I mean, it's just crazy, isn't it? You think the way the Jews attack him in the press in America, and yet he's done more for Israel than any other president in America, and he just doesn't seem to realize that no matter what he does for them, that they still attack him. You might have faith that might change in his second term, Matt, but I'm not too sure. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.